Welcome to the Sci-Fi Reading Series podcast. I'm science fiction author Kate Sheeran Swed, and every week I read two chapters from one of my books. This is season one, and I'm reading from Chaos Zone, the first book in the Parse Galaxy space opera series. Make sure to scroll on back to the first episode in the season if you need to get caught up. Stick around after the chapters for exclusive behind-the-scenes commentary. Let's get on with this week's episode. Chapter 1. Sloane didn't know who had named this place, only that Shard was a poetically appropriate title for a cursed sliver of ground like this one. A leftover from an obliterated planet, Shard had somehow sprouted a city in the same way that a rock might sprout a diseased fungus. From a distance, Shard resembled nothing so much as a chunk of eggshell or a broken piece of pottery. It tipped precariously as it wobbled along its orbit, as if one good hard shove might send it spinning into a neighboring rock. As bad as it looked from afar, though, Sloane couldn't help feeling that Shard was much, much worse on the ground. It took the better part of her focus not to lose her footing as she picked her way along the street, stepping around discarded wrappers and mysterious puddles where destroyed flip tabs had just happened to land. Single-use tech and no doubt stuffed with incriminating data, had the tech not been obviously broken past saving. It wasn't easy to maintain a don't-talk-to-me swagger while trying not to slip and fall in a puddle of grossness, but Sloane did her best. She'd been warned away from this place, from the whole bone system, in fact, by an entire conference table full of fleet captains, and for good reason. She had to look like she belonged. Or at the very least, like she wouldn't make a good mark. It wasn't that she took the stay-out warning lightly, though she didn't hold much stock in anything a fleet slug had to say. It was much more that she needed tokens, a lot of tokens, and she wasn't going to get them by picking up a dishwashing gig. The power vacuum in the bone system meant opportunity, and if the fleet opposed her presence here, well, that was just one more reason to show up anyway. Remind me what happened the last time you tried to steal from a casino? Sloane's pilot, Hilda, tiptoed her way along the street a few steps behind, as if hoping Sloane would meet with any unseen traps before she did. She'd wrapped her long gray braid into a bun at the nape of her neck, and she had on a pair of black boots with silver spikes running up the sides. Sloane suspected the boots contained an armory's worth of hidden knives, though she hadn't dared to ask for confirmation. Hilda piloted Sloane's ship, her uncle's ship, technically, but with no security officer to help, Sloane had had to beg the woman to join her on this job. Shard wasn't the kind of place you landed without someone to watch your back. "That was a Lux casino," Sloane replied, "and I told you I'm not going to steal." "What are you going to do then? Trick? Con? Tap dance?" Since Hilda wasn't going to like the plan, Sloane opted to keep her mouth shut. Hilda would understand the job as soon as they reached the casino, or shortly after. Assuming they could find the casino. Sloane's uncle had abandoned her, it was true, but he'd left behind a treasure trove of information on every underworld ring in the galaxy. Black markets, drug cartels, smuggling rings, if it had a mildly nefarious purpose, Uncle Vin had cataloged it. But some of her uncle's records were out of date, and things in the bone system had shifted rapidly since his disappearance. Even if she could find the casino, the entrance protocols might have changed. If that had happened, she'd do what she'd do best. She'd improvise. For now, she concentrated on scanning for the casino entrance, while also keeping her footing and maintaining that all-important swagger. A hidden casino in a place that was already about as underworld as you could get, at least until you reached the outskirts of the galaxy, was not going to be easy to find. It was impressive that someone had built a city on Shard at all, even if the effort was more that of a child's tower that had been made with a pile of rusty blades. The place was dirty and broken and loud. Every shout echoed down from the dome that enclosed the city, glancing off the repurposed steel beams and layers of scaffolding that somehow seemed to serve as living quarters. Hove train markers spiraled above the city, the trains themselves obscured behind an orange-tinted cloud of smog and grime. Sloane could hear them, though, the telltale huff and grind of their engines cutting through the city noise. The whole city was a mishmash of jangled music and yells, some happy, some not so, and it smelled moldy and sick, like week-old dishwater. Even the gravity anchors that dotted the pavement to either side were spotted with rust, and Sloane was glad she'd thought to tuck a spare O2 bag into her pocket. If the devices that kept her feet on the ground were that banged up, she didn't want to think about the shoddy maintenance on the life support systems. The grav anchors looked like drop coins, as if they could be picked up and shoved into a pocket. In fact, she was kind of hoping they could. "There," Hilda said, and Sloane paused, twisting to follow the older woman's extended index finger toward a window with a yellow border. It wasn't the window itself, with its broken pane of glass, or the sickly color of the neon that bordered it. It was the rose petal, a real one, that someone had skewered on the edge of the sill. The bloom was as red as a wound. "Inviting," Sloane said. Hilda's fingers twitched as if she wanted to reach for her boots. "It's not too late to take a bounty instead." Sloane licked her lips. Maybe Hilda wouldn't object to her plan after all. Because they were here for a bounty, it just wasn't one Hilda would agree to take. But their ship wouldn't make it to any other bounty. After everything Sloane had put the moneymaker through in the last few months, she'd barely been able to drag it to the closest reputable service station, once she had the money to pay for service, let alone prevail in the inevitable fight that an out-of-Admo bounty hunt would mean. No, this was the only option. If she said as much to Hilda, though, the pilot might dig in her heels and back right out. So instead, Sloane stepped over a pile of refuse, choosing not to look too closely at it, and sidled up to the door beneath the pedal. It looked like every other door on the block, with a slipshod coat of gray paint that was peeling at the corners. Sloane ran her palm along the stones, searching for a scan point, while Hilda stayed a step behind, arms crossed over her chest. "Try to stop looking like my mother, will you?" Sloane said. "We're here to have fun." Or pretend to, anyway. But it was more likely that someone was listening to them by now, no reason to broadcast their plans, and it was probably going to be at least a little bit fun. One of the bricks buzzed against her hand, just as Uncle Vin's notes had promised. She said, "Foxglove," and the door clicked open, admitting her to a narrow hall with chipped green paint and a floor that was more rust than metal plating. According to Vin, the pedals outside the window changed regularly, but the password into the place did not. Given that he'd been missing for half a year now, she was lucky the rules hadn't changed. A second door clapped open, letting Sloane and Hilda slip into a box of an elevator with blue screen walls, as pleasant as an elevator in a fancy hotel or outlet station. The car started up without so much as a shudder, and a light bell tone sounded as if to announce the voice that began to rattle off a welcome. "The 7 blades in your boots must be checked." The voice spoke to them from somewhere in the ceiling, and it issued the instructions in a pleasant, musical voice, even though whatever system could identify and count hidden blades on someone's person was intimidating by default. The elevator certainly seemed like it belonged to a luxe casino. Sloane's father probably didn't even have an elevator this nice in his penthouse. He certainly didn't have scanning technology that could pick out each individual weapon a person might be carrying. When Sloane stuck her hand out to prod at the wall, though, her fingers melted straight through a holograph. An open lift. This was just like Dad's. Excited, Sloane flicked the hollow walls off, revealing the orange glow of the streets of Shard all around them. The towers looked even more like blades from here, dark and foreboding. This place wasn't pretty at all, but the open lift always gave her a rush. "Don't do that," Hilda said, squeezing her eyes shut. "You're giving me vertigo." "You're a pilot." "Right, not an elevator operator." Sloane didn't want to lose the view, so she dug a fistful of coins out of her pocket. Most places didn't use physical tokens for currency, but she'd brought some along since casinos occasionally did. For fun, she suspected, more than convenience. Who didn't want to see stacks of money adding up on the table? "Do you know this trick?" she asked. Hilda was glowering at her. "Where'd you even get those coins?" "Not important." Sloane held her hand out, positioning it over the edge of the lift, and dropped the coins, watching as they fell down the channel. They dropped a bit too slowly, as if they'd been caught in a strong breeze. A count of three later and the coins were zipping back up toward her, just sparkling glints in the darkness. And they'd multiplied, too. She'd dropped three, and now she counted five. The coins would ride the channel all the way up to the top of the lift if she let them. With a single sweep of her hand, Sloane caught them as they passed the edge of the lift. The take? A pair of rusty gravity anchors from the surface. Not too bad. The lift is connected to the grav anchor, Sloane said. They do that sometimes when they want to cut corners. Hilda rolled her eyes. Excellent. That looks like the kind of trick that one could use to, I don't know, heist major amounts of anything magnetic. Sloane winked. Exactly. I guess I know who taught you how to do that. And with that, the fun of the game died. Sloane kept the smile on her face anyway, hoping Hilda couldn't see through it. She brought up the trick as a distraction, but she clearly hadn't thought it through. She didn't want to talk about Oliver. Not now, not ever. Luckily, the elevator voice seemed to have decided that it was time to read the rest of the rules. Welcome to the Snapdragon. No AIs are allowed. Weapons must be checked, and there is no fighting allowed in the casino except on level C. Sloane would have been willing to bet the voice was tied to some kind of AI, if a limited one, but house rules were house rules. Please confirm if you agree, the voice said. Confirm, Sloane said. Hilda sighed, then echoed her agreement. Sloane could almost hear her mourning her blades. Sloane would have liked to promise she'd get them back, but she couldn't. She had three possible exit points in mind, and none of them involved returning through the front door. The elevator doors opened with a musical cadence, and Sloane stepped out into a dream. Blue-tinged lighting transformed the casino into an underwater cavern, with wavy patterns on the walls and columns of golden beams that shone like starlight reaching down toward the ocean floor. When Sloane took a step forward, a school of holographic fish darted out of her path, swirling around the nearest card table before fading away. A soundtrack of waves and gurgling bubbles played quietly behind the rhythm of jingling slot machines and clattering luck wheels. Cards flipped, men laughed, and serving drones hummed through the space carrying trays of fizzing drinks. Not a Lux casino, Hilda muttered. Right. Vin hadn't mentioned the Lux aspect of this casino in his notes. Maybe it hadn't been Lux back then. He'd made those notes well before the Bone System's dictator had run off to another galaxy, leaving a lot of relieved people behind. Maybe the casino had come into its own Lux since then. Shard wasn't the kind of place where straight and narrow rich people would show their faces, but why shouldn't well-off criminals have a little Lux-level fun, too? While Hilda made her way to the counter to check her knives, Sloane took a good look around the place. She almost felt like she'd gone through a portal to another part of the galaxy. Shard's streets had been defined by torn boots and suspiciously stained sleeves, zigzagging drunks and bulging pockets that hinted of hidden weapons. Here, the gamblers wore long evening gowns and puffed-out skirts, silk ties, glittering heels. No one was staggering drunk, no one was armed either, except, she assumed, for the pair of tuxedo-clad guards who watched from either side of the room. How did the clientele get here? Through an underground tunnel? A hub train station, maybe? She glanced up as if the ceiling could supply the answer, but all it gave her was a holograph of a kraken that devoured a pirate ship as she watched, sending glints of treasure raining down on the casino floor as it feasted. All right, Hilda said, returning to Sloane's side. Where to? Sloane looked away from the kraken, trying not to question whether the tableau was meant to be a promise or a threat. Pirates got devoured for stealing, right? No doubt she was overthinking it. Level C, of course. Hilda rubbed her nose with the back of her hand. Didn't the elevator AI say fighting is allowed on level C? Sloane grinned. Yep, come on. Three gold-plated escalators later, they emerged in a rooftop garden to the soundtrack of live piano music and fists pounding into flesh. Obviously, the casino allowed fighting on level C. Fighting was level C. The garden did have plants, enough of them to fill the air with herbal notes, but she couldn't imagine who would come here for a leisurely stroll. Not with the elevated fighting ring that dominated the entire center of the terrace. A gray stone tower surrounded it, recalling some kind of ancient arena. They'd somehow built it so that the ring stood open to the air. Even with a ramp that wrapped around the first floor, the setup made the tower look like it was floating. On the upper levels, shadows moved inside the walls, people passing beyond the open arched windows or sitting on the edges, shouting and laughing and raising fists as they traded bets around. There were even figures lined around the top edge of the tower. She counted 6 stories, and she couldn't make out a railing. The casino probably had a force field or something to keep people from falling into the ring. Though, maybe not, this was the bone system, after all. As she watched, a hove train clanked to a stop far above the tower. They must be well clear of the smog up here. And hovered in midair as a trio of teardrop-shaped cabs broke free from the body of the train. They dropped silently to the top level of the ring, where they discharged their passengers and admitted more before ascending to click back into place. A beat and the train took off again, snaking its trackless way through the city like a serpent on the hunt. That explained how the casino's clientele avoided the streets. Sloane wouldn't have expected to find drop cabs in a place like Shard, though. Hove trains were one thing. They were ubiquitous throughout the Parse Galaxy, but drop cabs added a layer of complication that hinted at infrastructure. Or innovative thinking. She frowned after the disappearing train, trying to decide if it meant anything. She itched to flick another coin toward the ring just to see if the grav anchors were tied in with the drop cab channels. Even if it didn't tell her anything, it'd make a neat sound when the coin hit the bottom of the pod. A loud cheer from the crowd jerked her attention away from the sky and back to the matter at hand. She'd have to look into the drop cabs later, because there, standing in the center of the ring with his teeth bared and his fists raised, was the bounty whose capture would pay for Moneymaker's repairs. If she was lucky, and if she was quick, she might be able to use the tokens to set her own bounty, to find her uncle, and to get back to her real life. A girl could hope. Brighton was a huge man, and strong, his upper arms rippling with muscles. And he knew how to use his size to win a fight. If the skyboard was correct, it showed him winning the last 5. He looked poised to win this one, too. His opponent was half his size and swaying fitfully in the middle of the ring. Sloane was no expert, but the guy seemed half-cooked to her. She managed to take 3 steps toward the ring before Hilda froze. Not bad, considering. She'd expected the pilot to catch on a beat sooner. "Oh, no," Hilda said. "Damn it to the fringe, Sloane. You knew Brighton would be here, didn't you?" Sloane grabbed a flute of sparkling wine from a passing tray and tossed back half the glass, almost choking on the riot of fizzles that crowded down her throat. "Yes," she said. "Yes, I did. See? No robbing. It's a Federation-approved bounty." "That's what you said last time." Yeah, she might have tried to capture Brighton once before. Sloane rolled the stem of the glass between her fingers. "To be fair, last time you found the bounty posting, in my ex's things, after he betrayed us with his criminal tendencies." Sloane wasn't sure if he could technically be referred to as her ex if he was dead, but it got the point across. She really hadn't wanted to bring up Oliver. Hilda crossed her arms again, adding a frown and a disapproving chin tilt into the mix this time. Clearly not ashamed of her actions, then. "I just need someone to watch my back," Sloane said. "Can you do that?"
"Do I have a choice?"
"Sure, but the ship only flies when I say it flies, so if I die, you'll be stuck on Shard. Not the best place for a summer home, though I've seen worse." She hadn't, and neither had Hilda, probably. After a moment of glaring, Hilda grabbed her own flute of wine, gripping the stem so hard Sloane expected it to crack. "I'm gonna kill your uncle." Not if Sloane got to him first. Trusting Hilda to follow, Sloane made her way to the curving ramp that led into the towering stands, scanning her palm for entry. The passage was dimly lit, castle-like, and it smelled like sweat and old wine. So much for the Lux. Sloane kept half an ear in the ring as she moved toward the top of the tower. She had time. As long as Brighton stayed in the fight, she'd be able to pin him. She ran a finger along the tech inlay in the stone, a thread of black that marbled every inch of the gray walls. This place was well watched. Every few steps, her foot crossed a gravity anchor pressed into the floor. They weren't nearly as shoddy as the ones on the Street of Shard. Those she could have displaced with a chisel and a prayer. Contemplating her options, Sloane emerged onto the top level of the ring where a burst of wind from the descending drop cab whipped her hair into a frenzy. As she grabbed for it, Hilda gasped. Still moving, Sloane turned back to see what had scared her, and ran straight into a midnight blue fleet uniform. or more accurately, the chest of the person inside the uniform. Sloane stepped back as the fleet soldier shot out a hand to steady her, half ready to tell him to get the hell out of here in that uniform before someone stuck a switchblade in his back. But when she looked up at his face, his gray eyes widened in recognition. It was mirrored, no doubt, in her own expression, because this man commanded the entire Galactic Fleet. And worse, she'd met him before. Chapter 2. Behind his shield of blue uniform cloth and gold-plated medals, Commander Fortune had the kind of face that made it impossible to guess his age. There were hints of lines beginning to form at the corners of his eyes and the tops of his cheeks, but they were neither deep enough to suggest advanced age nor tan enough to imply long hours in the sun. Flecks of gray interrupted his dark hair, which was so richly brown that it bordered on black, making gray hair almost inevitable. Sloane should know she'd plucked a silver strand out of her own 30-year-old head last week. Whatever his age, the commander was a tall man, imposing. He was, in fact, looking imposingly down on her now, betraying only a hint of surprise at her presence here. The tick of an eyebrow, nothing more. "Miss Sinclair, isn't it?" he said. His voice was both soft and resonant, his fingers gentle as he held onto her elbow. She remembered that voice and the feeling of wanting to lean in to hear what he had to say, even when she knew she'd do better to run in the opposite direction. The last time Sloane had seen Commander Fortune, he'd been staring at her as she'd made her escape from a fleet ball, after threatening to destroy a priceless sculpture, among other things. Her father had managed to shield her from fleet prosecution, retribution more like, because he'd believed the whole incident to be nothing more than a witless prank. Even with his intervention, Sloane's reputation in the Academy had been destroyed, what had been left of it anyway. The fleet, though, had been forced to leave her alone, but legal recourse or not, this man clearly hadn't forgotten her. Fortune knew her real name, he had to. Even had Sloane's father not thrown his weight around on her behalf, that video of her hugging that sculpture had gone viral, her name splashed across the feeds for months. Fortune would have seen it. She'd made him look like a fool. Now she gripped her wine glass, doing her best to steady herself. She couldn't lose her head here. Better to say nothing than to give the game away. "We've met before," Fortune said, as if she'd responded. As if he was reminding her of something. "Or did you forget?" She glanced at Hilda, who gave her a get-it-together shake of her head. Or maybe it was an abandoned ship shake. Sloane couldn't tell. Too late for option B anyway, and potentially a lost cause for option A. Hilda blinked, and words traced across Sloane's eye screen. "Sky Sinclair," the message read, "your alias at the ball." Sloane could have kissed Hilda for the reminder. She wasn't much for aliases. She had enough to keep track of without a file full of fake names to remember. She cleared her throat, straightened her back, and looked the commander straight in the eye. She wasn't sure where this was headed, but she wasn't going to let him taunt her. If that was what he was doing, his expression was impossible to read. "It's Sloane Tarnish," she said, "not Sinclair." He released her elbow, and she startled. She hadn't even realized he'd still been holding it. "I know." He turned to the nearest arch and looked out over the fight, resting his gloved hands on the ledge. There were fewer people here than there'd been on the way up, which his presence might well explain. These were not the kind of people who wanted to keep company with the fleet. "Nice night for a fight," he said. "Are you here for anyone in particular?" "He knows." The words drifted across Sloane's eye screen, another message from Hilda. "He knows we're here for Brighton." So what if he did? Brighton might be a level 14 criminal in the fleet's books, but the bounty was Federation approved, and that meant the fleet couldn't stop her from cashing in on it. Even the fleet captains, who'd warned her to stay away from the bone system in the first place, had acknowledged that. Sure, it had been some kind of a glitch in the system that allowed a fleet-classed criminal to qualify for Federation-approved bounty in the first place, and while he'd still been in prison. But Brighton was free now, and ripe for the taking. Whatever that glitch had been, it wasn't her problem. Sloane narrowly kept from cringing as she realized Fortune had probably heard about that incident, too. She propped her elbows on the ledge beside him as if leaning in for a better look at the fight, while surreptitiously stretching her fingers toward the far edge. If there was a force field protecting the ring, she'd be able to feel it. "I hear someone released that man from prison," Fortune said, nodding down at the ring. Yep, he definitely knew she was here for Brighton. Still gripping her half-empty wine glass in one hand, Sloane pushed the fingers of her other hand past the border of the ledge. No resistance, no sting, no zap, no force field. "I hear it wasn't a Fleet prison at all," Sloane said. "I hear that the Fleet was allowing him to languish on an otherwise abandoned station, where he'd been stashed to rot by a world-crushing dictator." Fortune's expression changed a little bit at that, his lips compressing ever so slightly. It might have been shame or regret. It was most likely annoyance. "Have you ever tried negotiating with a madman, Miss Tarnish?" "Only once or twice." A drop cab descended to the right, and Sloane tracked its route, hoping she still appeared to be watching Brighton's fight. The droplet-shaped cab hovered over the ring when it landed, spilling its passengers into the oversized archways. Interesting. Sloane sent a silent message to Hilda, who was still hovering near the opposite wall. "Do you know if the hove trains would be connected to the gravity anchors on a place like this?" "Why do I have a feeling I don't want to answer that?" Sloane could almost hear the pilot's sigh between the words that streamed across her eye screen, but she needed an answer. "Hilda?" A beat of nothing. "Then, most cities, the systems would be separate. A place like Shard, I'd say it's 50-50 that they rigged them together. Use the grav anchors to counterbalance the trains. Like you said, it would save time and materials." And Hilda acted so innocent about the trick Sloane had shown her. Uncle Vin had probably used the same one every day. Hilda probably could have harvested a dozen grav anchors from the surface instead of a measly pair. Sloane would call her on it later. For now, she needed an exit. "Do the drop cabs improve those odds?" Another beat. 40-60 in favor of dovetailing systems. It's the kind of corner they might cut. Emphasis on the might. "Magnetic? Like the lift?" "I'm not an engineer, but probably. Do I want to know why you're suddenly so interested in gravity engineering?" "Nope." Fortune was watching her out of the corner of his eye, as if he knew perfectly well that Sloane wasn't simply watching the fight. Brighton was facing a new partner now. She hadn't seen the fate of the previous one, and by the look of things, he was about to win again. Sloane pinged the last message to Hilda, "Meet me on the ship," and turned back to the commander. "Tell me something, Fortune," she said. "What are you doing in a casino on Shard, of all places?" He laid his palms out flat on the stone sill, and she imagined he was pressing down hard, holding himself steady, a restrained man, cautious. "Perhaps I'm securing a level 14 criminal who escaped from a holding cell that we had every intention of extracting him from so we could ensure his safety." "Right." Sloane made herself meet the commander's eyes, though his gaze was unnervingly intense. "But what are you doing here? Surely the most powerful man in the galaxy doesn't need to be on the ground for every single fleet operation." Was it her imagination, or did he flinch at that? Imagination, it had to be. "That would be impossible," he said. "And yet, here you are." "Perhaps I'm just here to watch the fight." She couldn't tell if she was getting to him, or if the raw note in his voice was something else. Irritation? Suspicion? It couldn't possibly be amusement. She really needed to work on reading people better. "You just don't seem like that much of a gambler," she said. He smiled. It was just a quirk of his lips, but it deepened the lines around his eyes, and not in a bad way. "Oh, I'm not." The crowd reared up, their boos and hisses pinging from every direction, and Sloane whipped her attention back to the center of the ring. Below, a team of fleet soldiers was surging out of the second level of the tower ring, leaping from the arched windows in half-covered uniforms. They'd come here in secret. Of course they had. The soldiers landed, half a dozen of them, each of them bouncing just a tick too high as the floor rippled to absorb their impact. Every last one landed on their feet. The arches might not have force field, but even a Shard casino kept safety mechanisms on the floor. Good to know. The fleet soldiers closed in on Brighton to the tune of the angry crowd, elbowing his opponent out of the way so they could clap a pair of magna cuffs around the big man's wrists. In seconds, they'd secured his hands in front of him, while his lips moved frantically as though he was trying to defend himself with words, little good that would do. Above, the Hove train drifted into sight, and Sloane wished she'd started counting the seconds since the drop cabs had ascended. The commander had distracted her. Never mind. The drop cabs would be here in a minute, give or take. Sometimes things lined up so perfectly that it made her want to laugh. Sloane drained the last of her wine and shoved the glass into the commander's hand. "Hold this for me, Fortune," she said. She didn't wait to see if he accepted the glass or if he let it fall. She swung up onto the ledge, and before she could think too hard about it, she jumped. The crowd was mercilessly loud as she fell, her hair streaming out behind her so she wished she'd tied it back. Half the boos and jeers shifted to cheers again as whatever safety force was in the ring floor pushed back against her, vibrating hard enough to make her ribs ache. It felt like a reverse parachute, a field of resistance shoving her up against gravity. She imagined new bets being passed through the crowd with her at the center of them, though she had no idea what they would bet on. How long she could stand in the ring without getting shot? It was better than imagining herself dominating the public feeds again, though on a place like Shard, people tended to be more careful about what they photographed. Sloane's boots hit the floor with a jarring crack, but she kept her footing, managing to push back against the field, enough to launch herself back into a long jump. How did Brighton fight down here? It was like taking a stroll through the inside of a bug zapper. The jump rocketed her past the surprised soldiers, and she threw herself straight at Brighton, knocking him back toward the edge of the ring. The man certainly smelled like he'd been fighting for hours and eating onions before that. "What are you doing?" Brighton growled. She didn't know if he recognized her. She didn't care. Overhead, the drop cabs began to rain out of the Hove train. She had seconds now. A bell jolted over the crowd, a bright, ear-wrenching tone that suggested trouble was on the way. Casino security, more fleet soldiers, maybe even a good hard zap from the floor. "You can go with them," she said, shouted really. She had to with all the noise. "Or you can go with me. Choose." Brighton took one look at the advancing squad. Well-trained soldiers couldn't be put off for long, and his big face blanched. His nose was smashed flat as though it had been broken so many times it had just given up. "You, I'll go with you." Sloane grabbed the man's magnetically cuffed wrists. "Jump." He obeyed, and she jumped with him, wrenching his wrist toward the gravity anchors that dotted the perimeter of the ring. They slammed into the closest one, the magna cuffs zinging against the gravity anchor with a suction-like charge. For a second, nothing happened. Brighton flailed, his arms stretched high above his head, wrists stuck fast to the anchor. "I can't move." Above, the drop cabs discharged their passengers and waited the requisite seconds for new travelers. Sloane couldn't see what was happening on the platform, but she had to guess that no one wanted to leave quite yet. The squad advanced on them close enough for one of the soldiers to reach for her leg. If Hilda was wrong, and if Shard hadn't dovetailed their Hove train system with their gravity anchors, Sloane and Brighton would both be in fleet custody in about half a second. The drop cab started to rise, and Brighton's magna cuffs caught the flow of power between the grav anchor and the drop cab channel. Sloane grabbed onto his neck as his arms jerked over his head, and he gave a shout of surprise as the magnet whipped them through the ring. They moved too fast for her to make out Commander Fortune, assuming he was still watching from the crowd, but she had to imagine she'd surprised him into making another actual expression. "You are a lunatic." Hilda's text was as toneless as the commander's face was impassive. In Hilda's case, Sloane preferred to imagine the pilot's voice tinged with awe and appreciation. She also preferred to picture herself rising gracefully with the pod, even hooked to Brighton as she was, and would avoid any photographic evidence to the contrary. "The ship, Hilda. Meet us at the next station, would you? I'll key the codes in from here." "On it." The pod locked onto the Hove train, and Sloane climbed over the still-screaming Brighton to haul herself inside, then bent to help him follow. The Hove train zipped through the city, leaving the casino behind.
Welcome to the commentary segment of the podcast. So first off, I just want to say that Sloane is a major fun to read, and it's fun to go back through these chapters and like experience her as I wrote her the very first time, at least in her own books. She's kind of like a combination of Jack Sparrow and Peter Quill, like kind of, but she's got her own quirks, and She doesn't have much of a filter. She says what she thinks. She comes up with wild solutions to problems that shouldn't work, but often do, just like she did in those chapters. I love writing her. I love the cast of characters that surround her. It's like they're funny, but they're also, you know, I really love them deeply. I'm so serious about their, you know, little issues. That sounds dismissive, but they're, you know, whether it's a small subplot that doesn't seem important or if it is something, you know, bigger and more dramatic, I really do care about them. And that's like that nice combination of with Sloane. Like, she really makes me laugh, but also I really like want her to be okay, which sounds weird because she's my character, but it's true. So since this is the first episode and these chapters refer to some events that happen throughout what I call the Parseverse, and I will get to that, I thought I'd just give a little bit of background about the different stories that take place within this world. So one of the things about the Parse Galaxy is that it's not a civilization based off of Earth. So there was no interstellar mission that seeded the universe, no like intergenerational space travel or anything like that. The people are basically current, actually, with our own time on Earth, more or less. So that might not seem that obvious if you haven't read any of the other books in this universe. It's kind of more like Guardians of the Galaxy or Star Trek, where the concept is that there are these like humanoid civilizations elsewhere. I mean, even Star Wars, they're just kind of out there, right? The known Parse Galaxy is branched out from the center systems. So Sloane is from one of those systems. It's called the Ilia system. And the next kind of ring of the galaxy is the middle systems, and that's where the fleet is based. Then you have the outer systems that are a bit less well off, and finally the lawless fringe systems. Now the Adu system, which is the bone system, is where Sloane is hanging out in these couple of chapters on Shard. It's actually a middle system, but they referred to it in the chapter. As they said, it was previously inhabited by this dictator with these mysterious powers, and he was strong enough to, you know, blow up this entire planet, so basically like Death Star level powers. And I worry sometimes about mentioning him too much because he actually does not play a part in this series directly, so I don't want to, you know, foreshadow that he's going to show up or anything like that. He is actually a villain in my superhero series, which is the League of Independent Operatives. So his absence does have a direct impact on the Parse Galaxy here, but he's off doing things in another story. This book was originally called Power Vacuum, but I changed it to Chaos Zone, and that's because the words did not look right on the cover. They were all these weird angles, and it just didn't look good. So Sloane and Hilda and their science officer Alex also appear in the superhero series, and they show up in book two. So if you're interested in all of those, you know, kind of dovetailing worlds and expanded universes and things like that, you can see how these two come together if you pick up that series. But again, they come in on book two. So that brings me around to the topic of the Parseverse. It's this expanded universe that encompasses the central space opera series, which is the Parse Galaxy. That's what I'm reading from now. And the superheroes. So far, those are the two series that they're in, but I'm already planning a spin-off series that's going to continue in this same universe. So that is sort of the behind-the-scenes note today about these two chapters, and I'm going to add links to those things, the ebook in the show notes, as well as the ebook to Alter Ego, just in case you want to go check it out or read a sample or something like that. I know that, you know, a lot of us, we like to read in the same genre, but also a lot of times if we are science fiction and fantasy fans, we will read different things. So, you know, go check it out, see if it's for you. It's a little bit different. And I guess that's really it for this week. I am looking forward to continuing reading Chaos Zone next week. So thanks for joining me. And if you have any questions, please feel free to put them in the comments there and make sure that you are subscribed. Thanks so much, and I will catch you next week.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's reading. Don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss the next episode. For more information about my books and to join my VIP reader crew, visit katesheeranswed.com.